Hello, welcome, and a happy new year to you. It's the Audio Drama Production Podcast. I'm Robert, and I'm here with Matthew in the booth.
Good day, sirs and ladies.
Yes, and to kick off the new year, we've got a very special interview with Eric Nazum, and he was the vice president at NPR for programming, and he's now with Audible, where he's the...
He's the SVP of original content, so the title says it all. He's pretty much responsible for, you know, commissioning original content at Audible. So it's pretty exciting to be able to get Eric on the show. He's a busy guy. We didn't have a lot of time. It's a short interview. I think it's around about 13 or 14 minutes. So I really did try and just cover the key points, basically. Mm-hmm. We won't hang about. We'll get into the interview. Robert and I are going to pick it up on the other side as well, because we've got some comments, but I don't suppose we should hesitate any longer.
No, so to kick the interview off, we asked Eric what his goal was for his new position at Audible.
I think that there's been quite a bit of quite a boom in digital audio listening in the past 2 years, and I think that my colleagues in Audible and I feel that we've only kind of begun to tap into what's possible. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to create a space where really extraordinary things can happen, and more people can find more things that they love and want to listen to in an audio space.
I was watching your speech at Podcast Movement, I think it was, with a virtual ticket, and I was really enjoying it, but my interest was piqued when I heard you mention audio drama. How much have you sort of looked into audio drama itself? I mean, we hear a lot of different definitions of what audio drama is. I'm interested to hear of your own definitions, especially when you compare it to something Audible's really famous for, like audiobooks, for example.
Well, you know, it's interesting because if you look at the audiobook space, there's things that feel quite like drama in there, and you'll often have an actor doing a narration of an audiobook, and you know it's very similar to what people would consider to be audio fiction in many regards. I think that audio fiction to me involves a story specifically constructed for an audio listening experience that kind of understands what works and doesn't work in an audio space and kind of creates a scene and an emotional palette that often involves multiple characters, multiple voices, some sonic design and treatment to kind of give you a sense of place and a sense of scene, and is produced in an audio vein, very similar to the way that a movie or a TV show would be produced for video. And I think that's it can be painted with a very broad brush, but it's a little bit like pornography. You know it when you see it, right?
Lock and Key, obviously, that came out fairly recently, an original production from Audible. Great show, and had a brilliant reception in the main from people. But I did notice, and we've commented on this before, there were one or two comments from people who said that it wasn't an audiobook, and in a sense they were right. Is there a way to be more clear, do you think, in the future, that it's not an audiobook and that it's an audio drama? Is this something that Audible might work on in future, do you think?
So I think that one of the things that is interesting, you know, Audible has made a number of attempts to do audio dramas over the years. Lock and Key, what you just mentioned, is the most recent. It was actually produced before I arrived, even though it was distributed afterwards. It is a quite significant piece of production. It's 20 hours long. Covers 5 books, comic books, graphic novels, many, many characters, very, very time-consuming, elaborate, and expensive production. And one of the things I find very curious about it, and I've been kind of pondering to myself, is it is a literal adaptation of that graphic novel. If there's a bubble in the graphic novel, somebody says something in Lock and Key. And I think that it's been downloaded many, many times. It's been, a number of people have been very, very impressed by it and loved it. I think there's a bigger way to approach it. And I don't mean bigger as in more time consuming, more epic, and more expansive, but bigger in to try to make it of appeal to even more people. And so I ask myself a lot about the form that I see in a lot of audio drama and the form I see in Lock and Key and the form I see in a lot of what the, for lack of a better term, the BBC style of audio fiction or audio drama. And I'm just not satisfied that it's the right mixture of elements to be of appeal to a much larger audience.
Could you maybe elaborate on that then, Eric? What are some of the things that you would like to see producers or writers doing differently?
I'm driven by how do we make this more appealing to more people. I think that I don't want to sound dismissive or in any way looking down at the significant impact that audio drama, as we know it traditionally, has had. It's of deep interest, but to a very small number of people. And I think that sometimes if you look at the common criticisms of it, you see of the form, you see people talk about there's too many characters, I can't follow what's going on. When I can, everything sounds fake, it's overacted, the sound effects are cheesy or overblown or overproduced, the writing often isn't very good. It's just there's lots and lots of things that, you know, when you watch a good play or a good movie or a good television show, you find yourself in a place of wanting to suspend your disbelief and go into a world that you know is not real, and you know people are pretending, and you know it's all fake, but you're drawn into it, sucked into it. And I think audio drama in its current form places a lot of roadblocks in front of that moment where someone's willing to suspend their disbelief. The fakiness of everything, the overacting, the sound effects, the dialogue, the way things are written, just doesn't strike me as conducive of that kind of emotional release. And so one of the things I've been thinking quite a bit about is, rather than have these big multicast dramas that go on for hours and hours, that we should be more inspired in literature instead of a novel, probably by a short story where there's a very limited action. There's a small number of characters. There's a very short leap between the action when you're introduced and the ultimate conflict that you experience. There are real stakes. Something matters. And that's very clear from the very beginning what that thing is, what it is. And, I recently read a audio drama script that someone had sent me for a 10-part audio drama series. And if you read the log line of this, it would say, this action happens and these people are put in this terrible situation. But the terrible situation doesn't even occur until the second episode, which is each episode is an hour long. So you have to be willing to sit through more than an hour of this thing just to find out what it's about. And I don't know, the world I live in, people don't have the kind of time or willingness to sit through something without a reason why. So I think that's kind of captures my feelings, really kind of being inspired by a short story to think instead of these big, huge, many, many character epic tales, of telling much simpler tales of things that feel much more closer in rather than grand, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, interesting points, Eric. I think, a couple of thoughts on that. I really like short stories, and I totally get what you're saying if something's strung out much longer than it needs to be. Two things I would say I do like to follow a story. I like to return to the same character. So that's how I kind of like ongoing serial type stories alongside short stories, because I feel like it builds that momentum. When an audio drama is releasing an ongoing story, it really builds an audience because people fall in love with the characters and the story. And also, another completely irrelevant point, when I go on Audible to buy something, I am looking for a certain length and something I'm going to spend the credit on. And usually anything under 3 hours has got to be pretty tempting for me to spend the credit on. So will we see a revamp? I know you can buy really short pieces for pretty cheap, less money than a monthly credit costs. But will we see, if you envisage the future, will we see quite a lot of these very short stories out there on Audible?
Well, first off, most of the all of the original content that we're producing will be available to all members without, as a benefit of membership, it won't cost any credits.
Right.
So you're right. A lot of people do hold on to that credit, want to spend it on something that's worth it. I think that that won't be a problem for us because anyone who's an Audible member will get it for free. And I do think that we're going to experiment around in a number of ways. Things that are, you know, because I'm talking about being inspired by a short story or stories that are a little less grand, that doesn't mean they can't be serialized. That doesn't mean they can't have multiple hours. In fact, I think that's quite possible. There's one series that I really like that we've been toying around with and we're pitched that I told the writer, go back, remove half the characters, switch it to a first-person perspective, and start the action almost immediately, and then we'll talk. You know, it's like I love the idea, but we can just tweak the way that it's set up now and make it kind of fit into my mold.
Just were you mentioning the commissioning there, I'm wondering if you could tell me what happens in between someone coming up with a story idea somewhere and it being a commissioned piece on Audible. And on top of that, are you commissioning a writer, if they're a writer and producer, to both write and produce it? Or do you have guys that are going to take the job over basically once the script's submitted and do it yourselves?
A combination. The setup we have around fiction is very similar to the way that a movie or a TV studio operates. And I can, you know, people come to us with a pitch. Sometimes they are pitching it and they would like to produce it. Sometimes they are like to write it. Sometimes they would like to direct it. But they come to us with a pitch. If we like the pitch and we think it fits in well with what else we're doing, we can kind of work with them to kind of fill in the creative team and start to do some work around it to see if it's something we like.
And what about, you know, someone who is listening to the show and they write and make their own audio drama and they have ambitions to be commissioned by Audible in the future and get involved in this? What would you say to them that they could be working on right now to improve their chances of that happening?
Well, I think that I will say that we have lots of people come to us with ideas. So I'd like to do something. There's really no shortage of ideas. If someone's in a position where they're also able to execute themselves, that puts them in a great position already. And if they're not, if it's just someone who's a producer or writer and doesn't have the digital audio experience, I would say find someone who you can connect with who can kind of fill in that gap for you.
Eric, what's your, if you know, things go the way that you want them to and you'll obviously have a vision for how Audible might look. Ideally, how do you see things, the landscape looking maybe in 5 years from now?
I have no idea. Because I've learned not to make predictions. There are some things that I think that are pretty safe bets. I think that there's a couple real problems in discovering new material and among podcasting. And be it in Audible or iTunes ecosystem, what have you. And my guess is within 5 years, people will have that pretty much solved. Because a lot of people are working on it now. And even if they don't get it right, they'll have a couple more chances at it in that period of time. So I think that as that gets solved, it's easier for people to discover and find things they like. You know, because right now there's 300,000 podcasts in iTunes, right? So with that number floating around, there's bound to be something you like, but how do you find it? And I think that whether you're interested in audio fiction or whether you're interested in vampires from the 16th century, whether you're into woodworking or needlepoint or, you know, the books of P.D. James, you're really in a situation where you can find a podcast about almost anything. Or an audio property about something, anything. But how do you connect to it? How do you find it? Solving that problem is, I think, the biggest problem that digital audio has. And in 5 years from now, we'll have that solved, which will make things flow much, much, much more easily during that period of time.
Eric, I really appreciate you taking time to talk to us today. Just in closing, I know we've kind of touched on this already, but you know, an independent producer listening to this now makes their own stuff, writes their own stuff. What advice do you have for them to go and work on right now, basically?
I would say that in the audio fiction space, there are a number of people. You know, it's the biggest customer in this field is the BBC, who wants a very specific style of production and a very specific approach. And I think that the people who will succeed in audio fiction in the coming years are those who can figure out how to kind of break away from that and do something really new.
So a very concise and excellent interview with Eric there, and I very much enjoyed listening to it. Very relevant to, well, to everybody that's involved with making audio drama, considering it's a growing genre. The first thing I wanted to pick up on was actually the usage of terms. Now, he did refer to it as audio drama, partly in reference to, or as a response to you using the term audio drama. He also referred to it as audio fiction.
Do you think that's an important point then, that, you know, maybe some people are using another term than audio drama?
Yeah, although I think he's on the cusp of using one term or the other, because he was keen enough to use audio drama when you'd used it, so we must have heard that before. I think we might have swayed him to using audio drama. I hope so, because simply I want a term to use and everybody uses it. Podcasting has been established well over 10 years ago. Audio drama simply has to be the term. And the sooner we get that nailed down, the sooner we can move forward with it, I think.
One of the things that, you know, looking back at the interview there and hearing it a second time around, is I kind of misinterpreted what he was saying when he talked about short stories. You know, at the time when I was doing the interview, I kind of thought he was suggesting that short stories are the way to go, period. Mm. Whereas what he was actually saying on hindsight when I listened back was that the short story model is more of an example, he feels, for storytelling, and that there shouldn't be extensive periods of time which is just filler. And, you know, I completely agree with that, because yeah, I think a lot of audio dramas do suffer from this. You know, just these long periods where the writer possibly feels that they're trying to build the story, but in reality, did it really have to be there? Could it be cut in half or even cut out completely? So that's definitely food for thought, I think.
We've always said, haven't we, that we need to keep scenes short and concise, take out absolutely anything that can go. If it can go, if you can possibly do without it, then do without it. And we would apply that to any form of fiction, I guess, to keep stories concise. But it seems to be even more important for audio, because us human beings are easily distracted. Sight is our primary sense. So therefore, to really be engaged in something with a secondary sense, like ears, we really have to keep the stories concise, even more so, because you can't just stare, you know, blankly at the screen like you would with a film and still more or less take it in. We have to keep it concise. It's the only way to be successful, I think.
I think another big point that came up here was the subject of people coming up with ideas, and maybe someone's able to write a story, someone's able to produce a story, but it's this, not need to necessarily be able to do everything, but at least have access to people who can. Whether that's learning to do everything yourself, the writing and production, directing, etc., or building a team around you. I think whatever route you go down there is only going to strengthen your credibility and your potential as an audio drama creator.
Yeah, maybe we can hopefully facilitate that a little bit and have people getting in touch with each other through us, through the podcast, through the Facebook group, writers looking for producers. Or maybe there is another platform somewhere, another website, where writers looking for a producer or vice versa. Or, as you say, do it all yourself. But that's up to you. If you think you can do both, then great. I think there's certainly two very extensive fields that take a lot of work. So that's a big decision. If you want to do that, it absolutely can be done. We know it can be done, but it might require some thought.
What about the subject of actually pitching to Audible? Now, he made reference to the fact that it's really no different than pitching a film. I know we've never actually, as far as I could remember, pitched anything at us, but it was something we did quite a lot of when we were in education, you know, writing treatments and stuff like that. And I know that you can get these templates, these treatment templates, pretty easily online just by Googling them. Some of the key things, as far as I could remember, for putting in a treatment was, certainly you did need an elevator pitch. You needed to be able to concisely describe your story very quickly and succinctly. And that was always very important for anybody you work, whether it's a story or whether it's something else.
And synopsis.
Yeah. I mean, you would have the opportunity to write a longer synopsis as well. But being able to describe your story in as short a time as possible is really important, because if you can't, then it suggests that it's maybe a bit too complex and maybe not that well thought out. Other things for putting in a treatment as well is to basically try and answer all the questions that the recipient of your pitch is going to have, to save them either just binning it because it's too much work on their part, or having to come back and ask you a whole load of questions. So stuff like costs and budgets, time frames, how will it sound, how will it be executed, all these things are worth describing, because...
And who's it for? Who's
the target audience?
What's it about? Who's it for? How much will it cost us? That kind of thing.
And even if you don't intend on pitching something to Audible, I think, like, it wouldn't hurt people to write a treatment even for their own needs sometimes. If you've got an idea for a story, it really wouldn't hurt you just to jot that down, to use one of those template treatments to detail it all. Because sometimes when you write something down, you'll notice something that you might not have picked up if it was just an idea floating about in your head.
So, yeah, it's part of the outline process. You know, okay, what am I looking to achieve here? What's the outline? Who's in it? And what is ultimately the denouement, as they say, very badly. And that's why, I guess that's why people like the BBC, when they receive commissions, they ask for a treatment, because otherwise you get a half-baked idea. So therefore, by definition, it must work in helping you to flesh out your idea before you go rambling off and writing 17 hours and you suddenly think, God, I don't know what's going to happen at the end of this.
I suppose in closing, because I don't want to go on too much, and I'm sure there'll be a huge discussion about this interview in the community afterwards, but I really do like the idea of chopping things down, cutting things down. We've spoke a few weeks ago about dialogue, you know, cutting dialogue, topping and tailing scenes, cutting your story, basically taking all the fat out. And I am increasingly attracted towards this way of storytelling. Taking, you know, if you've got three characters, do you need three characters? Could they be two or even one character? And just how can you compress everything down without harming the story, but really just taking all this fat out and trying to guide the listener through the experience with a lot less confusion, maybe even no confusion. I think it's no secret that at the moment, some of the shows that are doing really well, whether we want to call them audio dramas or not, the Black Tapes, etc., these stories are exceptionally easy to follow. Yeah. And I think that's why they've accumulated such a keen fan base, who are thirsty for their next episode all the time.
Funny, we mentioned Game of Thrones earlier. I noticed in the TV series that a lot of characters are minor characters have been taken out. In fact, there were times where there would be a character which was an amalgamation of two or three others, and they've been sort of fused together because you only needed one character to fulfill the roles of those two or three. I also noticed the Total Recall remake, a film which didn't need remade, in my opinion, and there was a character in it who was, again, the amalgamation of two others. So maybe if you've got several characters planned out, you don't need all of them. Maybe you could fuse them together as opposed to just dropping them entirely.
Absolutely. Look forward to hearing your comments, to chatting about it in the Facebook group. Get in touch, podcast@audiodramaproduction.com as well, with your thoughts. Before we get it wrapped up, just a couple of heads up this week. Well done to Brian Mock, our friend Brian, who's released his very first episode, his first audio drama. It's called Z-Poc Nation. Mm-hmm. He got in touch on Twitter to thank this show, basically, for helping him. So that's always nice to hear, and we wish Brian all the best for that. I really look forward to checking it out. I also wanted to say a big thanks to Steve Cardinal, who's a new Knight of the Pledge. And I wanted to say this as well. It's about time, because that's his show, and that's my pun. But thanks very much, Steve.
Very good.
Really appreciate that. And we'll put, as a thanks, we'll put the link to It's About Time, which is an excellent show, as well as ZPOC Nation in the show notes over at audiodramaproduction.com.
Yep, that's the website, audiodramaproduction.com. Email us, podcast@audiodramaproduction.com, and you can always get us hanging out in Facebook as well. We're on Facebook. Is it in or on? Let's say on Facebook, in the group. So get in touch, speak to us, have a happy new year, and lang may your lum reek.